Hello and welcome to episode 107 of City Brew Tours podcast, where we explore the best craft beer scenes across the United States. I'm your host, Brian. Happy to be back for another episode featuring our spotlight city this month, Cincinnati, the Queen City itself, the gem of Ohio. And I'm happy again to be joined by my wonderful co-host this month, a good friend, Braxton. Braxton, how's it going?
Hey, great, great. See the two beers we're drinking today. Getting really excited for that. And as always, great to see you. And as always, a showman. That's why you did the hand thing. Showman. You knew it was time to turn it on.
How's your week going, man? How was your weekend?
Oh, so far, so good. I was actually in Connecticut for a little vacation at the beach. So that was nice. Yeah. Ooh. Not as many breweries as I thought that would be in that area. But we went into New York, which is a good little time. So we went to a couple places there.
Nice. Nice. Well, since you're not going to ask me, my week has been going great.
I figured you were just going to tell me, like, hey, you know, had a lot of people come by for the Taylor Swift event.
Yes, lots of Swift buzz in the city over the weekend. We are extremely busy at the brewery. Really great weekend at 11th Hour Brewing Company. People have asked which brewery I work at. I've worked at a couple different ones, but now currently at 11th Hour, we'll be there for the foreseeable future. Very, very happy about that. And we had great weekend. I did not go to Taylor Swift. I had a wonderful Father's Day. And the week so far has been good. Great, I would even say.
Oh, okay.
Great, grand, wonderful. Well, tonight we are featuring what is the biggest Cincinnati brewery? Rheingeist, the ghost of the Rhine. The Spirit of the Rhine, a brewery that actually just this past weekend, while we were celebrating Swiftsburg down here in Pittsburgh, over in Cincinnati, Rheingeist was celebrating their 10-year anniversary. Last I checked the stats, they're doing over 100,000 barrels in production. They wear big boy pants, big girl pants over at Rheingeist, doing big things, brewing lots of beer and doing it exceptionally well, winning countless medals at both the GABF and the World Beer Cup, and really making a name for themselves with beers like the Truth IPA and their beer cider hybrid combo Bubbles, and the whole line that spun off of that. But at their core, they make extremely drinkable, approachable beers for the working class city that is Cincinnati. And that's why Rheingeist is so well representative of the people that make up that company and the people that make up the community of Cincinnati. Is they make beers with character, beers that you can enjoy, but beers that still, you know, have a world-class standing amongst all the beers out there in America. And super excited to be drinking beers from them, and super excited to be talking to our guest tonight, which we'll get to in a little bit. He's an old friend that you may have seen on our Cincinnati episode of Next Exit from Untapped last year. But that is far too much talking for me to be doing without having an open beer from our featured brewery in front of me. So, Braxton, what do you say we open this Petrichor?
I was hoping you would say the name, because in my head, I was like going over it a couple of times. I was like, how do I heat something, record, I don't know. So I'm glad you said it, and I hope that's how you actually say it. I know somebody may say something to us if I ever go to Cincinnati. I'm going to ask the pronunciation.
Yeah, we should probably, I probably should have checked with Rheingeist on that, but I'm pretty sure I would say Petrichor. Petrichor. Folks at home, write in. When you leave a review on iTunes, phonetically spell out Petrichor for us and tell me if I'm doing it right or wrong. So yeah, we're featuring the Petrichor tonight. We're also featuring their Beer for Humans, which is an easy hop ale. This Petrichor is an American wheat ale brewed with Pilsner, white wheat, Vienna, and flaked oats. So I'm expecting really nice malt character for it. It also has Cascade and Huel melon hops. So I'm expecting that there's going to be a really nice fruity flavor in there, some grapefruit character, some melon character in there. Cheers, Braxton.
Cheers. As you're saying that, I'm like smelling it.
You're already, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, wait, I do get that now. I'm like, wait.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that is.
That's really
good. Is perfectly drinkable for summer. Yeah, you definitely get that that fruity hop character is playing very well with some of the fermentation character that's going on in here. I feel like I'm getting like fermentation esters and like floral kind of yeasty flavors from it, and it's playing really well with those Huel Melon hops. Braxton, thoughts on our beer?
Really good. I appreciate the fact that I think I could, this is what makes these kind of beers dangerous, because I could drink them all day and I'm thinking to myself, ultimately, you know, 5.5%, it's mild, and then those add up. So this is definitely a great beer, but a dangerous beer because of the fact that it can creep up. I feel like I could drink this. It has, it's just not, it's not killing my tongue. Nice and refreshing, and I want to come back to it. Like, okay, it's settled down. Let me come back to it again. Like, no, I got it, but no, let's try one more time.
That's a really good way to put it. You want to come back to this beer. It is inviting. As I pick it up and have another.
See?
Delicious taste. Yeah, that is a wonderful beer. For those that don't know, Rheingeist, and for the listeners at home, you'll have to look this up. Go on your Google machine and look up Rheingeist cans. They have such an excellent example of branding. If you took away all of the words off of any Rheingeist can or bottle label, you would immediately know it's Rheingeist because they have such a recognizable logo. They have a recognizable font. They have a real consistent layout to the cans and the branding on there. And it's just a really good example of a brewery that put efforts into branding and marketing that paid off in reflecting a cohesive brand overall, rather than just doing a bunch of flashy stuff and kind of stunty gotcha marketing. It's really thoughtful and really shows off what is important to them. If you didn't know, the logo is a little ghost, so that's the Geist, and it's over a river, which is the Rhine. That kind of body there is Rhine. I think that's what Chris from Rheingeist told me when I met with him. That's probably not a good way to like follow up that statement. I think that's what he told me.
We were drinking at the time. I think that's what he said.
We were. We were. That's thank you. Thank you for helping me out with that. That's a great excuse. You start using that one too much though, and people start talking behind your back about an intervention.
Yep. I was just about to say that. Get intervention real quick. The camera's in. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Talk to you about your problem.
I think now is an excellent time to get bailed out by, I mean, excuse me, bring on our guest for the evening. Like I mentioned, he was a guest on our wonderful episode of Cincinnati Next Exit with Untapped last year. He is the executive director of the Cincinnati Brewing Heritage Trail. Please welcome Steve Hampton. Steve, how's it going?
Fantastic. You guys, well, I can actually, I've already been listened to, so I know you're doing great. So I don't,
we're
kind of right back into that. So yeah.
I mean, it's courtesy, you know, it's exactly. It's the niceties. It's
we're,
small
we're
talk.
Very polite in Cincinnati, you know, it's that German heritage.
We love it. We love it. So Steve, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to get started in this interview, like we do with all of our interviews, with our quick sip questions. These are fast questions. We want fast answers from you. It'll help us get to know you fast. Steve, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What's your favorite beer?
Oh, I'm a lager guy. Lately, I've been drinking some of Northern Rose. I'm bad at names because there's just so many beers, but basically they're Helles. It's a great beer. It's too many beers, too many breweries. Like, again, going back to your comment about like, I was drinking when I had that, so I think it was this. Yeah, but no, a lot of lagers, you know, a lot more breweries are doing lagers these days, but definitely like Northern Rose is it's a neighbor, so it's very convenient.
Nice. Favorite place other than a brewery to grab a drink in Cincinnati?
Oh boy. You know, honestly, we've got a number of great parks that have beer licenses. So Washington Park, right in the heart of Over the Rhine, is a great place. You can sit there. It's a recently renovated urban park right in the middle of Over the Rhine. Music halls in the background. It's a fantastic place to play. The kids can go run in the fountain. You can sit there and drink a beer. Really, really good thing.
Awesome. Favorite season in Cincinnati?
Boy, like them all. I'll say spring, though, because spring is when we celebrate Bockfest, and Bockfest is quintessential Cincinnati and beer. And so I got to go with that.
Shout out to Bockfest. What's your favorite place you've ever traveled?
Rolling with the beer, Germany. I had the opportunity to go there for about 2 months when I was in college, and got to spend a lot of time there. It's actually before I really knew a lot about beer. Actually, I turned 21 when I was in Germany, so a whole lot going on with there, but I loved it. And actually, I think I may have the opportunity to go back for Oktoberfest this year, so coming full circle, you know. So yeah.
Ooh, nice. And then finally, Steve, have you ever seen Bigfoot?
I have not.
Okay, I'm gonna keep trying.
I was gonna say we'll get somebody eventually, but be like, Ashley, bow, here we go.
we've gotten a couple good stories from our friends in Michigan and our friends up in the Pacific Northwest, and we've gotten a couple good ones, but
check with me in a week. I'm going camping this weekend up in Mohican, up in kind of north central Ohio, and apparently unbeknownst to me, they've had lots of Bigfoot sightings over the years. So in a week I'll come back and be like, I saw him. See on the news, local man sees Bigfoot, you know, maybe that'll be me. So
okay, awesome. So Stephen, many cities in America have rich brewing history dating back to the 1900s. However, very few have one that has a nonprofit organization working on the history. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Cincinnati Heritage Trail?
Yeah. So the Brewing Heritage Trail is, we don't even need Cincinnati because we are the Brewing Heritage Trail. So that is just where we happen to be at. What's great about the Brewing Heritage Trail and what we're doing with it, it obviously it celebrates beer in all its forms, and Cincinnati specifically is really the story of beer in America, and that's what's great about it. We're not just telling the story of beer, we're telling the story of Cincinnati, the story of America through that lens of beer, because beer is tied historically to culture, to the economy, to politics, to really so many different aspects of the country, and specifically Cincinnati with that huge German influence. Literally, the story of beer is a story of the streets that we're walking around and that we live in now. And so it's a really unique way to look at beer. When we started this, 10, 12 years ago, actually even tours, we started in 2006, there was craft beer revolution. And so the only brewery we had was at the time, Sam Adams at the old Shanley Brewery, And, luckily now we have active breweries in the oldest breweries like Ryan Geist, like Christian Borlein, Tass, and a number of others. And so it's kind of come full circle. But again, it's so much more than just beer. Beer is that hook, gets people who normally maybe wouldn't say, hey, I want to take a history tour, but beer history, sign them up. And then you can sneak a little knowledge in there, while they're enjoying their beer, learning about the fun stuff. So.
Yeah, funny enough, Braxton and I are both guides for the City Brew Tours Company here in Pittsburgh, and we've done a number of tours in the area, and it's always cool to find that connection between the people that are really interested in the history of the breweries, and specifically here in Pittsburgh, talking about the old places like Penn Brewing Company, and those people that are just there because like they heard it's about beer. We give beer on the tour. Which I think you give beers on.
But most
on
your of tours? Our tours do include a beer of some sort. Yeah. So it's a good hook. And there's always the people you can tell that the friends booked the tour. They're like, I thought I was just going to be inside the brewery the whole time. We're down 30 feet underground in an old dusty, whatever brewery. And they're like, this is cool, but not what I expected. So that we definitely get that a lot on our tours. So it's a good way. It's always nice to be surprised from time to time. But I mean, the great thing about it, that's really one of the cool hooks that we have to be able to tell that story, is this rich number of the physical remains of a lot of these breweries. Besides being one of the biggest brewing centers, pre-prohibition, all that stuff, we have one of the largest collections of pre-prohibition brewery architecture in the country, and it's all mostly in the middle of a huge historic district that's still remaining. And while there are big, massive complexes in St. Louis and Milwaukee, nobody has dozens of historic brewery structures, you know, from brew houses to bottle houses to stables to offices to malt houses and cellars, all that stuff in the middle of a living, breathing neighborhood. And that's what really helps set us apart and allows us to tell a story in a really unique way. The physicalness of that in the middle of the city allows us to tell these stories in, again, a way you're not just staring at a parking lot and going, imagine what used to be here. The fact that you can walk into these buildings and underground and really viscerally feel that, even though there's hasn't been anything in there in 100 years, it's still really powerful. And again, it's a really great way to be able to tell that story.
Yeah, you talk about being right in the heart of it. Your storefront slash museum slash start of the most starting point of most tours is right in the heart of Over the Rhine. You're right. There's a brewery right next door to you. I think you're right around the corner from Rheingeist and Sam Adams. So you're right in that neighborhood that means so much to Cincinnati's brewing history. And like Braxton mentioned, there's, you know, there's a lot of cities that have this brewing history going back, you know, to the 1900s, 1800s, but there is something special about Cincinnati. And what do you think is it that makes Cincinnati's history unique?
You know, I think, again, some of it is because it was so directed. Part of its timing. Cincinnati was really, it was, if you go there and look around in the old parts, like in Over the Rhine, it was really an East Coast city. At the one point, we were, you know, for quite a number of decades, we were on the top 10 biggest cities in the country. We were at the forefront of Western expansion in those very early days. And so we straddle a lot of different worlds. We're Midwest, but if you look at our architecture, you could swear maybe you're in Boston or different places. Yeah. We're across the river from Kentucky, so we have the Southern influence. So we have a lot of really kind of different influences on us. And, you know, the fact that we're a river town, that's how things were shipped out and got to places before the railroads and before the interstates. And so our physicality was built in a much earlier time. And I think that really reflects, we're a city of hills. We're not just a big flat plain stuff. So we're very much these neighborhoods and these pockets. And you never really get a full sense of Cincinnati. You can't look at one spot in Cincinnati and see the whole city. It's you're constantly discovering different places, different neighborhoods, different breweries. And I think that it's kind of reflected that, you know, a lot of neighborhoods have their own little, you know, brew pubs that are producing beer for outside of them. Maybe we'll can something from now and then. We obviously have our Rheingeist and our Sam Adams and Mad Trees and some of our big breweries, but it's really a city of neighborhoods and different unique areas. And there's not just one flavor of Cincinnati. You have lots of different flavors of Cincinnati. And so you get all of this real melting pot of heritage, but of influences and physicality, all those different things in it. You have all these little just micro areas, you know, if you want to throw a fancy word, you know, the terrier, you know, that you've got your place about it. And it is really unique. You know, you go to these different places and they're all just slightly different, their own feel. And I think that really reflects in the brewing, you know, both current day and just even if nobody has a real connection to the brewing heritage, knowing that that's there. And the fact that, again, you go to Rheingeist, everybody's been to Rheingeist. It's in a huge bottling plant from the 1800s, from at one point the fifth largest brewery in the country. Like you can't ignore brewing history in Cincinnati, even if you try. So all those things, it's just always there, and it really influences, I think, in a lot of different ways.
Awesome. You know, you mentioned Rheingeist. When I think of Rheingeist, I think of this large brewing monstrosity. But how does Rheingeist compare to, now I may get the name wrong, so you have to correct me on this, more lean?
More line.
More line, okay. More line brewery or the other historic Over the Rhine breweries?
So, I mean, the whole more line story is just, it's a microcosm of the story of American beer. So Christian Moorlein was started in 1853 by a German immigrant named Christian Moorlein. He had traveled over here. He had trained a little bit as a brewer, but he was a blacksmith, and he worked his way digging ditches and shotting horses and making his way to Cincinnati, where he set up a blacksmith shop. And in a few years, he partnered with another brewer. Turns out he brewed really good beer, partnered with another brewer, then eventually went out on his own. And he grew that brewery in pre-Prohibition times to the fifth biggest brewery in the country, was Christian Moreline in the heart of Over the Rhine in Cincinnati. Now, he passed away before Prohibition. Prohibition shut everything down. His family decided they were toying with the idea of opening a new modern brewery after Prohibition, but they never did. And Christian Moreline went away. In 1981, Hudepohl, which was one of the few remaining, one of the last three remaining breweries in Cincinnati that actually predated pre-Prohibition times, they brought back Christian Moreline as a brand, as one of the first craft beers in America. So you had Anchor Steam out on the West Coast, and you actually had Christian Moreline was really the second craft beer at the time. They didn't have the word craft beer. It was the better beer movement. And on a side little fun side note, nobody had ever done this before. They were the first American beer. They sent their beer back to Germany, to Bavaria, and had it certified Rheinheitsgebot pure, which no American beer had ever decided to do that. So it's kind of a little fun side note. But that name was brought back as the forefront at the really early days in 1981 of the craft beer movement. You know, what was the craft beer movement at the time? And then Hudepohl got sold. They merged with Schelling. They sold the physical brewery to Sam Adams, and they were being owned by a company in Cleveland and just brew wherever. And it was brought back to Cincinnati eventually, and is brewed back in Cincinnati again. So again, that whole story of just Moreline is the story of American beer. But yeah, I mean, back to the kind of comparison of the Rheingeist. Rheingeist hit, a little bit of lightning in a bottle. You know, they hit the perfect time. They had the perfect, they really came with very hop heavy beers and kind of that West Coast style right when that was popping. They landed an amazing facility that right when tap rooms were legalized in Ohio, that they could pack a tap room and sell the beer on their own and make a lot more money selling beer on their own. They're a great team over there. And it was a lot of, some of its timing, a lot of really hard work and great work on their end. And so, there's only a few of those that were able to do that. Madtree, not quite to their level. They are kind of coming out at the same time. Moreline's kind of struggled the last few years. They're on their third owner in the last 2 years, but the new owner's doing some really great things. They're actually renovating two old historic brewery buildings to bring that brewing back in and have a huge taproom restaurant. So the new owners were really excited about. They're going to be kind of bringing it kind of back at its preeminence. So, you can have the best business plan in the world and sometimes it's happenstance, but they definitely had a great business plan and a great team and kind of hit that, right at the right time. And they invested in distributing right away. I mean, there's so much on the technical side we can talk about with how Rheingeist put their team together and their business plan. But they're kind of like, they're going to be the casebook study, in the business book of how do you grow a brewery. But it's also, it's also a harder time to do that now. There's a lot of breweries out there now, a lot more than there were 10 years ago. So it's again, that timing plays a lot into it.
Well, it's much like you talked about the story with Christian Moreline came to Cincinnati originally, opened up as a blacksmith. Rheingeist, one of the founders, came to Cincinnati, fell in love with the town, thought it was a good place to open a coffee shop. And originally opened coffee, and then met the other, or had met the other owner previous
coffee guy.
And then was like, hey, I think this is the right place for beer. And
and even as a side note, timing wise, that the facility that they're in, Moreline almost moved into that building before Rheingeist did. So who knows what would have happened if that, maybe that would have been flipped, so just didn't work out for them at the time. And Rheingeist snapped it up, so
it is one of the most impressive and like awe-inspiring breweries I have ever been inside, because you go into this kind of old school industrial looking building, you go up two flights of stairs to get to the tattoo, if not three flights of stairs to get to the tap room itself, and opens up into this gigantic huge room with probably 30 foot tall ceilings, giant fermenters backing this huge open beer garden style, inside beer garden style area with big tables. I think 30 beers on tap or something like that. It is quite impressive. And to see some very good video footage, I'm gonna mention this again. Check out our Next Exit episode from Untapped. The folks from the camera folks that shot that made that space look absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And anyways, my glass is empty. Braxton, you want to open our second beer for tonight? The aptly named Beer for Humans.
Absolutely. So I kind of beat you to it. I was getting thirsty too, so I was ready to go.
You already fired it up. I didn't even hear it. You opened it away from Mike, off mic.
Just a little, you know, I was taking care of it. Because I was so engaged when Steve was starting to really talk about just like the more line. Oh, more man. Line. It's just crazy how things work out. So I can only imagine just getting this from now, how the tours work. You know, even when people were like, I didn't expect this, but hey, I learned a crap ton of stuff about beer. So when I have people that come into Cincinnati, I can say, hey, do you know about this? You know about this? So you kind of look like the it person, like, I didn't know all this. You know, I just know. Hopefully they mention you, but sometimes I think people may just say, hey, I just know this.
It's a good thing. We're, you know, at our core, we're actually a nonprofit. We're actually a neighborhood development nonprofit. And we got into beer history as a really unique way for neighborhood redevelopment. So we're a little atypical in a lot of ways. So as long as they're coming out with a positive vibe, if they want to be the expert, we're all good for it, you know? So.
Oh, so good.
This beer is wonderful. So just to get back to like to the beer that we opened, and like I think what we're supposed to talk about on this show, it's always supposed to be about the featured beers. I don't ever know what we're supposed to talk about. I guess I'm the one that's supposed to figure out what we're supposed to talk about. Please tell me if I'm wrong.
I mean, I could just ramble on things. Yeah, well,
beer club subscribers in the chat, please tell me. But yeah, this beer is exceptional. So Beer for Humans is what they call an easy hop ale, clocking in at 4.5% ABV and 7 IBUs. I can't believe this. And to achieve those 7 IBUs, they have used a blend of Centennial, Mosaic, Eldorado, Eureka, and Sultana hops. So they have very carefully selected blends of hops that complement each other in both oil content and aroma and IBU or not IBUs, AAUs, alpha acids that are going to go into the beer and make for this extremely easy drinking but unbelievably complex beer. I don't know if I've ever had a beer that's this complex. It's like 4.5%.
You know, this is my first easy hop ale, so I'm just trying to savor it all week, because at first I thought it was
I think they made that up, dude.
Yeah, great job. I was like, it's just the sessions, but I mean, if you can make it work and trademark, hey, you know, we were the first brewery to do easy hop ale. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah,
it's just so good. Like, it's
there's no like, this is gonna sound like a wild comparison. There's no like the there's none of like the ginger beer flavor. But the first thing that came to mind is a Moscow Mule for me. That mix of alcohol and lime and like a little bit of like spice character, to me immediately hit Moscow Mule in my brain. Maybe I've just been drinking too many Moscow Mules, but that's what I got.
I can see where you're going with this. This is just another really good beer that's dangerous because you can continue to sip on this all day. But again, 4.5%. So it's just like, oh no, I can have 5 or 6 or 10 of these. Like, oh yeah, I'm fine.
You know, here's my theory. I was going to throw this out there earlier when you were talking about the 5.5% beer. Something happens when you cross that 5% and things start to get a little bit more serious, where that 12 pack that you might drink throughout the day, like hanging out on the river or at camp or whatever, you know, a day drinking thing. It catches up with you pretty quick. For some reason, once you get under there, 4.5, like those tend to end add up a little bit slower. And I don't know what it is, but 4.5% range seems to be the money range for me. Maybe because I started on Guinness. That was like my first, like, oh, this is good beer. And that's like, I think that's like 4.2.
Yeah.
That's... So anyways, we're getting way off the rails here.
Well, let's see if I can get us back on track. So, Steve, we talked a lot about some big breweries here in Cincinnati, but what are some of the smaller spots you like to frequent or maybe tell people after a tour you would recommend to people in town?
Yeah, so again, I mean, you can make a day of just hitting breweries, you know, and over the Rhine and downtown. But again, we've got, you lose track, and depending on where you define what Cincinnati is, you know, 50, 60 breweries. But, you know, some of the really cool thing is there's some just doing all kinds of different things. So you've got High Grain up in Silverton, which is just doing, they do all their beers really well, but they have some really just straight classic Pilsners and Hellas's and that type of stuff. There are really, the other thing that I find great about a lot of these brew pubs too, they're all just doing amazing food and different types, but they have a really great restaurant. You've got Urban Artifact, which if you like sours and tarts, I mean, they're just world-class in what they're doing over in Northside there. That's amazing. Let's see, who does some really unique stuff? Street Side does, they do a lot of the kind of the lactose type ones and some of those, so the milkshake styles.
Pastry stuff, yeah.
Pastry stuff, yeah. But they're always doing really creative things. Kind of one of the OGs in the craft beer scene, and Listerman, they always have something kind of unique on tap up there. And so, yeah, there's really something for everybody. I know we just literally just across the river in Northern Kentucky, we had like a meadery opened. So that's, you know, if you're into that. So, you know, lots of just great straight beer. But if you really want to explore some styles, there are definitely some rabbit holes to go down in Cincinnati. And then, yeah, those are some of the fun ones.
So everyone at home, all the breweries that Steve mentioned are the breweries that we're featuring this month. And Steve didn't know that. I hope you all take that as a vote of credibility to us and our folks behind the scenes that are finding the breweries that we're featuring, because Steve didn't know that we are featuring this month Listerman, Streetside, Urban Artifact, and then the other two are the big ones, Mad Tree and Rheingeist. So yeah. Shout out to us for being super cool, especially with like, with Cincinnati locals.
Nicely done.
So Steve, other than beer, obviously we're trying to promote Cincinnati as a beer scene and say like, look, people need to go and check this out and visit these wonderful breweries and experience this culture and community that the beer scene plays a role in Cincinnati. So other than that beer scene, what is something that you wish Cincinnati was more well known for?
I mean, I touched on a lot of it. I think Cincinnati is truly just a hidden gem of a lot of things. I mean, it is, as I mentioned, it's Midwest, but it's Southern. It's East Coast and it's urban, but it's, you know, kind of got suburban stuff. And there's just all these little gems. I mean, again, history, you could just go all day long on history if you like that stuff. So, you know, we talk about like what our goals with the trail. We should be on the same. When you talk about cities like Savannah or Charleston or Boston, for places like you go to because of their history, Cincinnati should be right in that same breath. We have just a wealth of history of different unique things and that type of stuff. But again, just, you know, we have a great culinary scene that's just doing amazing stuff. I think we had like 3 James Beard nominees that were just up for awards, like for the national awards, just in a couple weeks ago. Again, there's not just one Cincinnati thing. So I there's so many unique little aspects of Cincinnati. You know, you can just hang out downtown and over the Rhine and get a feel. You go out to some of the neighborhoods, you go to Northern Kentucky. There's just so many different unique aspects. The topography is great. You know, because we've got hills and a river, it's, you never have the same view, you know, and it's just, there's all these unique things kind of coming together and creates just a wealth of different experiences, really whatever you're looking for. You know, right now, sports-wise, we're sitting pretty. This is a rare trifecta, quadfecta. I mean, the Reds are somehow in first place. The Bengals are Super Bowl contenders. FC Cincinnati of soccer is in first place. It's really a special time in Cincinnati. There's a real energy, and there already was. You know, we've had an amazing renovation of Over the Rhine, which is a, you know, 360-acre historic district, you know, just outside of downtown. And there's a real energy to Cincinnati, you know, both downtown and the core and other neighborhoods. It's just a really fun time to be here. So that's a really, with a real specific answer. I kind of gave you a big one, but again, there's just not one thing, I think. And that's the cool thing about Cincinnati.
It is the sum of its parts.
Yeah. That's a great win.
And that's what makes it special. Yeah. I, as you've been talking about the things that are special to Cincinnati to you throughout this episode, I'm thinking of the time that I've spent there riding around and just kind of observing. I've been lucky enough to be driven around the city, I think, both times that I went there. And it was nice to kind of take in and look at it. And it did remind me of those kind of old world East Coast cities that have that old architecture and that were these bustling river towns. Shout out to Ohio River buddies, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Ohio River buddies.
Lots of similarities in our cities. Yeah.
But there is this feel, culture, spirit around the pride that Cincinnati locals have for what is special to them about Cincinnati. And with different groups of people, you'll find different things that are special to them. And that's why I immediately said that's some of it's a sum of its parts. Is all of those things are what make Cincinnati special. It's not one thing. It's not just the beer scene. It's not just Skyline Chili, which I, funny enough, I think is the first time I've said that in three episodes that we have featured Cincinnati. It is the sum of all these things that come. It's the working class history. It's the rich German history, the background of all these German immigrants moving to the Over the Rhine neighborhood and basically making this brewing hub in the 1800s and 1900s before Prohibition in Cincinnati, and having the fifth largest brewery in the country at one time to today, where it's this mix of all these different East Coast influences, Midwest influences, Rust Belt, working class influences. And today the beer scene is so rich and there's so much you can get out of a visit to Cincinnati. Speaking personally, as somebody who drove there earlier this month and was there for about 24 hours, I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. Every single thing I did while I was there, I really enjoyed. It's a city that I immediately felt comfortable in and felt at home in the very first time I went there. And the Brewing Heritage Trail, we didn't even talk about the fact that you took me and Kenny into the tunnels and yeah, we had a great time. We should, I was thinking this earlier, with three beer guides, three history guides here, three tour guides here, I think we should do a round table what is the weirdest thing, not a round table, but as two tour guides here, Braxton and I should ask you, Steve, what is the weirdest question you get often on your tours? I think for us, the funniest one is like people ask, like, when do you add the alcohol to beer? And it's like, we've been talking about this whole process of creating sugar and the yeast feeding on it and, you know, turning into carbon dioxide and flavor compounds and alcohol. And then someone's summation of that is like, well, then, yeah, when do they add the liquor to make me drunk? But for you, with the history side of it, what are the weird questions that you get often when you're on your tours?
I think the one, you know, various versions of it that we get the most is going into these old cellars and they're dank and moldy and dripping and whatnot. And it's all around, you know, how many people died here? Where are the dead bodies down here? And the steam goes down here. Like that's where we get it. So, I'd say that's the most common in that variety there.
Well, I'm glad that I can play into that, because I believe when we were in the tunnels, I said, hey guys, you know what the number one cause of death for brewers was back in the day? Suffocation. Let's get out of this tunnel quickly. Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for joining the show. And
yeah, my pleasure.
telling us about Cincinnati history and what the Brewing Heritage Trail does. Please plug for the Brewing Heritage Trail. Where can people find your organization? Where can they learn more about what you do?
It's easy. It's brewingheritagetrail.org. That's all our tours. We give guided tours all year long. We have a variety of two different tours. Kind of our standard tour is about an hour and a half to 2 hours. You visit at least one cellar and historic brewery building. Almost all of our tours include beer, but we have everything from a brunch tour. We do a distillery and brewery tasting tour. We just launched the beer and baseball tour in Cincinnati, where if you love baseball, we take you to every single site that the Cincinnati Reds have played professional baseball in Cincinnati and telling you the stories along that and how beer was a big piece of that. So again, there's a kind of a tour for everybody. I can also can't help but not plug Bachfest. Bachfest is, this will be, I think, the 32nd year. It's the largest Bach beer festival in America, actually probably the world. We'll just say the world. Yeah. It's been going on for 31 years. It's a 3-day celebration of Bach beer, the coming of spring and over the Rhine's Brewing Heritage. Kicks off with a parade on Friday night at happy hour. We parade up the street led by a giant wooden goat, a real goat pulling a keg of beer, monks, and just, you know, kind of goes from there. But there's a whole weekend of course, Bach beer, but all kinds of great activities. So that's bachfest.com. So come visit us in March. Well, it's not always as great, but, you know, the joy of doing an outdoor festival in March in Cincinnati. Drink some Bach beer, you'll be fine. So
I've made a number of promises on this show, and I don't know if I kept any of them, but I think I'm going to try to go to Bachfest next year. That sounds amazing.
It's uniquely Cincinnati thing. And I joke, we're really the caretakers of it. It's kind of got like elements of New Orleans and Mardi Gras, like kind of the cruise, like it's not that organized, but like we set the table for the parade and then you never know who's showing up. Like we normally have people register to keep some semblance of order. And it's just ridiculous. And there's a sausage queen competition. There's a gender neutral competition that we elect a sausage queen to lead the parade the following year. There's a snowman that gets set on fire, all kinds of stuff. So yeah.
What?
We had a blizzard in 2009 that shut us down on Friday night. So the following year, this is one of my proudest accomplishments. I came up with the idea. We have the precipitation retaliation happy hour. We burn a snowman in effigy because obviously you can't really burn snow. But we burn a snowman in effigy the week before Bachfest, and generally it's worked for us. So we've had tornadoes miss us. This year we got a little too windy one night, but we managed to survive. So yeah, so it's a blast. But yeah, Bachfest, brewingheritagetrail.org, doing all so.
All right. Oh my God. I so as soon as we get off of here, I'm going to bachfest.org and, is it bachfest.org.com?
We're .com, I think. Just Cincinnati Bachfest, you'll find us. So.
Just Google Cincinnati Bachfest. I'm going to go to that. I'm going to plan my trip for next year. I mean, you had me at the parade is led by a giant goat and, you booked my hotel room by telling me that you're burning a snowman in effigy. I mean, my cousin's getting married next year. I have plans for next year, but I am no more excited about anything than I am about potential of me going to Bachfest next year. Why didn't I know this existed? Okay.
The best kept secret.
When were we there to shoot? Man, we must have just missed Bachfest last year.
We were trying to get you there at Bachfest, and I think the scheduling didn't work. So
yeah.
The first conversation with Kenny was going to try to get you here for Bachfest. So, yeah.
Oh, wait. Kenny messed that up so I can blame him? Kenny Gould, I'm coming for you. All right.
Oh, man.
Steve, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thanks also to Rheingeist for supplying beer for this episode. If you want to follow more about them, you can find them simply at Rheingeist on Instagram. That's R-H-I-N-E GEIST on Instagram. Shout out to Ryan Geist for not only supplying the beer for the episode, but for our beer club as well. All of our subscribers have been drinking these awesome beers with us tonight, and you can do the same. Just head over to shop.citybrewtours.com and you can explore subscription options to join our beer club and get wonderful beers like these shipped to you on a monthly basis. You also get the opportunity to join the live stream and hang out with us as we record each one of these episodes. And you also get special perks that can only come with being a part of the nation's oldest dedicated brewery tour company. Shop.citybrewtours.com. Check it out. Now,
I don't know who that was.
Somebody just laughed at the background of one of your mics, and it caught me. Anyways, back to the professionalism. Next week, we will be featuring our final two breweries of Cincinnati. We'll be talking about Mad Tree, which we mentioned tonight. Beautiful facility, big brewery that brews excellent beers. And also, we'll be featuring the wonderful folks from Urban Artifact. And we'll be talking to the chief of sales over there, the head sales guy over there, and talking about everything that they do with their fresh pressed fruit. What do they call what's the special word that they use to refer to them, Steve?
Fruit tarts.
They're fruit tarts that they make with fresh pressed fruit, not purees. Fresh processed fruit. And we'll be talking about everything Urban Artifact next week to close out our Cincinnati episodes. But for tonight, that's gonna do it. So until next week, stay safe, be kind, and support local breweries. Cheers, everybody.